Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 39. I intend to do the whole chapter in this audio, verses 1 through 23. This is the story of Potiphar's wife attempting to seduce Joseph. Our context is this. In a previous chapter, we had Judah sleeping with his daughter-in-law Tamar, hired her as a prostitute unknowingly. Sad story there. That was an interlude because in the previous chapter before that, chapter 37, we have Joseph, because of his dreams, his brothers got jealous. They sold him into slavery to Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. And so now we resume the story with Joseph in Egypt in Genesis chapter 39. Starting with verse 1, we read this. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Now, the Ishmaelites are mentioned at the end of chapter 37, verse 36. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guards. And so, after the interlude of chapter 38, we take up the story of Joseph being sold to Potiphar again. Now, Joseph being taken down to Egypt is closely paralleled with Israel in Egypt, as the NIV Study Bible points out. This is sort of literary, but I will give it to you because it's of interest. Initially, Joseph was obtained a place of honor in Potiphar's house. Likewise, Israel was first received in honor in Egypt because of Joseph. Then Joseph is cruelly thrown into prison, his only crime being his attractiveness and moral integrity. Likewise, Israel was thrown into slavery because Israel was being blessed, becoming very prosperous, and the Egyptians got jealous. Next, Joseph was raised up among the Egyptians, because Egyptians' lives were in his hands during the famine. Likewise, Israel raised up under Moses, because why? Egypt knew that their lives were in Israel's hands also, because of the 10 plagues that Moses had called down on the land of Egypt. So there's some parallel there. Now, Potiphar has a name that means devoted to the sun, as Gill says. That was the local deity of An, Heliopolis, a famous Egyptian city. And by the way, nobody knows exactly who this pharaoh was that Joseph was serving under. There's a lot of very interesting speculations on the internet. I don't know. I don't pretend to know. I don't know what city Joseph was in when he was serving the pharaoh. So we're not going to worry about that. Potiphar, devoted to the sun, was the captain of the bodyguard. Nobody's exactly sure what kind of officer this is. Sounds like the Praetorian Guard in the Roman Empire. It sounds like, and at least in the English translations, it sounds like a body of soldiers who were tasked with protecting the personal body of the pharaoh. But at any rate, he's a big shot in the Egyptian kingdom, so Joseph was put in a strategic place when he was sold to Potiphar. Potiphar bought him when he saw Joseph on the market with the Ishmaelites. Joseph's age, appearance, intelligence would have caused him to be valued on the slave market, as John Gill says, and that's also probably what attracted Potiphar's wife. The Ishmaelites is who Joseph was purchased from. These Ishmaelites are also called Midianites back in chapter 37, also called Midianites somewhere else. I think I don't have the site. The reason for that is the Ishmaelites were related to the Midianites. Midian and Medan and Ishmael were all sons of Abraham. Ishmael, of course, by Hagar, and Midian and Medan by Abraham's later wife, Keturah. Genesis 25:2, Keturah bore to Hem, Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan and Midian. So that's why they're called Ishmaelites sometimes and Midianites other times. So we go now to verses 2 through 4 in Genesis 39. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. The Lord was with Joseph. Now that's an interesting phrase, God being with Joseph. It's mentioned three other times in chapter 39, in our chapter here. In the very next verse, in verse 3, when his master, that's Potiphar, saw that the Lord was with him, with Joseph, and that the Lord made everything he did successful. Verse 21 in Genesis 39, this chapter, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. He granted him favor with the prison warden. That's when Joseph got thrown into prison, as we'll see in a minute. Verse 23 of Genesis 39, the warden did not bother with anything under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him, and the Lord made everything that he did successful. God was with Joseph to prosper him, to make him successful. And when I say prosper, I don't mean made him rich. Obviously, he wasn't rich when he was in jail, but what he was a successful administrator of the prisoners in jail. So that with Joseph is mentioned four times overall in chapter 39, three times other than this time that we just ran into in verse 2. Now, the phrase being God being with you is a very common promise in the scriptures. We read in Genesis 26:24 that the Lord was with Isaac. The Lord appeared to him, Isaac, the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you, and I will bless you and multiply. You notice that when God is with you, good things happen. Here is being blessed, being multiplied. I've already mentioned God was with Joseph, and everything he did was successful and prosperous. Genesis 28:15, God says to Jacob, Behold, I am with you, Jacob. And I will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So being with Jacob means God keeps his promises and going to get him back into the promised land. Again, with Jacob, referring to Jacob, Genesis 31:3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. It was a dangerous journey back from Haran to the promised land, to Canaan. Joshua 1:5. No one will be able to stand before you all the days of your life, just as I have been with Moses. I will be with you, Joshua. I will not fail you or forsake you. Now, what was the implication of God being with Joshua? Nobody's going to stand before Joshua all the days of his life. Good things happen when God is with you. Isaiah 41:10, Do not fear, for I am with you. This is referring to the nation of Israel. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. So being with the nation of Israel, God being with the nation of Israel, has the following implications. You don't need to be anxious. You will be strengthened. You will be helped, and you will be upheld. Jeremiah 1:8, Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. God being with Jeremiah means God's going to deliver Jeremiah. Jeremiah 1:19, They will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I am with you to deliver you. Again, Yahweh being with Jeremiah means that God will deliver Jeremiah. Matthew 28:20, Teaching them to observe all that I command you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. This is the Great Commission. And Jesus being with the disciples means that the nations will observe all that Jesus has taught the disciples. Acts 18:10, For I am with you, this is with Apostle Paul, and no man will attack you in order to harm you. For I have many people in this city. This is in Corinth. So the implications of Jesus being with Paul is that nobody was going to attack Paul in order to harm him. Stephen also mentions this in his martyr speech before the Sanhedrin as he's being stoned. Acts 7:9, The patriarchs became jealous of Joseph and sold him into Egypt, yet God was with him. So it is not a minor thing to say that God is on your side, that he's with you. Paul actually mentions that, I think, in the book of Romans about God being on your side. And of course, a lot of people have abused that and said, God's on my side as I attempt to blow up the bank. And then, of course, skeptics make fun of that. But don't make fun of the Bible, my friends. You do that, it's not a smart career move. Now, verse 3, Genesis 39, Potiphar saw that the Lord was with Joseph and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Interesting. Joseph went from a pit in Dothan where his brothers had put him. He went from there to slavery, held in slavery by the Ishmaelites. He went from Ishmaelites to Potiphar's house where he was prosperous and successful. Later on, we're going to see, after he's framed by Potiphar's wife, he's going to end up in jail. And then he's going to be taken out of jail to be a ruler in Egypt. A big shot in charge of the granaries. I mean, Joseph, you talk about up and down. I thought Winston Churchill went up and down in his political career. He can't compare to Joseph. What the application for us is, don't get depressed if you're down. God can raise you back up. And don't get proud if you're up, because life circumstances can take you back down again. But whether you're up or whether you're down, God is with you if you are a believer in him and you have Jesus with you, in you, living in you, Christ in you, the hope of glory. Now, who did all this prospering? Was it Joseph's personal skill at management? Well, verse 3 says that Potiphar saw it was the Lord that caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Now, Potiphar is a pagan, but somehow I guess he gave God the credit for causing Joseph to prosper. That's kind of interesting. But at any rate, it's very, very subtle thing to go from God prospering you to thinking you did it. and not God. Any success that you have in life, it comes from God. It doesn't come from you, because apart from Jesus, you can do nothing, as Jesus said in John 15, the story of the abiding in the vine. Apart from that vine, you can do nothing, folks. But Joseph, he was a believer in God, and God prospered him. Now, some notes about prosperity. Prosperity does not necessarily mean wealth. Joseph was obviously not wealthy. He was a slave in Potiphar's house, and he was a prisoner in the prison when the warden noticed there that he was successful in everything he did. So success, prosperous means successful, not necessarily wealthy. It could mean wealthy, but not necessarily. And another note to make about Joseph's prosperity is that God does cause his servants to prosper. We should never denigrate that. We should never envy those Christians who are successful. There's a lot of Christians out there who've made more money than me and who have been more academically successful and who are leaders in their field of medicine or law or whatever it is. Hey, if they're Christians, more power to them. I wasn't made for that, or I didn't work hard enough. I was too lazy. I wasn't smart enough. Whatever, that's fine with me, as long as those Christians are doing well. I mean, I wish I could be a point guard on a NBA basketball team, but that ain't going to happen. I'm happy about those who are successful in doing that. God is not a socialist. He does not envy those who are successful. Now, I don't know what Joseph was doing at first in Potiphar's house, but verse 4 says that Joseph got a promotion. So Joseph found favor in Potiphar's sight and became Potiphar's personal servant. Sounds like instead of just being one of the household help, the slaves that were running around doing various tasks, mostly probably eunuchs, Joseph did such a good job at it that Potiphar made him his personal servant, kind of like his valet, perhaps. And then he became overseer of the house, head of all those other servants in the house. So Joseph has made his way up, being promoted because of his success. John Gill says all business cash and accounts were put under Joseph's care. Now notice that Joseph was in a house. He was in Potiphar's house. This is a good thing. Usually people who are bought as slaves were bought to be put into houses for domestic purposes. If you were a soldier in a defeated army, you were usually, if you were not redeemed, paid for by family members to let them out of slavery. If you weren't redeemed, you were sent to work at hard labor in the fields. So God is looking after Joseph. His situation of being in slavery was not as bad as it could have been. We go to Genesis 39, 5, 6, and 7. It came about that from the time he, Potiphar, made him, Joseph, overseer in his house, in Potiphar's house, and over all that he owned, all that Potiphar owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned, all that Potiphar owned in the house and in the field. So he, Potiphar, left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him there, with Joseph there in the house, Potiphar did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." Now, as I just mentioned, verse 5 mentions what we just mentioned in verse 4, is that Joseph had been promoted, and now he's overseeing the house. He's over everything. Joseph was always in charge of something in the Genesis account. He was in charge of everything in Potiphar's house. When he went in the prison at the end of this chapter, as we'll see, he was in charge of the prison. Genesis 39, verses 22 and 23, the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he, Joseph, was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. So the chief jailer says, "Hey man, you're a great manager. You take care of everything." And he didn't lift a finger to interfere. So Joseph was always in charge. Well, he was in charge in Potiphar's house. He was in charge of the prison that he was in. And later in Genesis 41, he's going to be in charge of all of Egypt. Pharaoh said to Joseph, Genesis 41, 41, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." He was in charge. He must have been a great manager. But notice how God is doing this all for him. He didn't try to manipulate events like his father Jacob always was doing. It's ironic. Joseph actually led a more blessed life than his father Jacob, even though his father Jacob was wealthy. But his father Jacob had done so much trickery and deception. He got deceived from his own sons about how his favorite son Joseph had been allegedly killed by a wild beast. He got deceived by Laban when he thought he was getting Rachel on his wedding night, and he got Leah. So he was deceived and being deceived. That's what his name meant, Jacob. That's the father, but not like son, not like father, like son. Joseph just did his work, and God blessed him. The Lord blessed the Egyptians' house on account of Joseph. So now the offspring of Abraham are becoming a blessing to the nations. Remember the famous promise to Abraham in Genesis 12:2-3? His promises to Abraham are land, offspring, and blessing. L-O-B, lob. Always picture Abraham at the tennis, lobbing the tennis at the net, lobbing a tennis ball way up in the air. Land, offspring, and blessing. Well, the blessing promise is not mentioned as much as land and offspring, but it's there. The very first instance of the blessing of the promise to Abraham is in Genesis 12:2-3. When Abraham was heading out from Haran, going into Shechem in the promised land, God says to Abram, "And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." Well, there's the blessings, and Joseph is now blessing a pagan Gentile nation, or at least one aspect of the nation of the government there, through Joseph. Jacob actually blessed Laban. Joseph's father, Jacob actually blessed Laban. Genesis 30:27, "But Laban said to Jacob, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account, because Jacob grew so many sheep for Laban and made him rich." So you see, Abraham's children are now becoming a blessing to the nations. In my opinion, that's ultimately fulfilled in the time of Solomon, when Solomon's trade with all the nations, people were coming to him to make business deals with him, selling him timber for the kingdom Hiram did, and the Queen of Sheba went up there, and Solomon was the big dog in the ancient Near East, and the nations were blessed by their association with Solomon and the kingdom of Israel. Now in verse 6, the scripture reads, "So he," that's Potiphar, "left everything he owned in Joseph's charge, and with him there, with Joseph there in the house, he," Potiphar, "did not concern himself with anything." Oh, or is it he, Joseph, did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate? Well, I read it as Potiphar. That he there could refer to Joseph, so that Joseph didn't concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Either way, I think it's Potiphar. Verse 6, "Joseph was handsome in form and appearance." And this, of course, is what attracted Potiphar's wife. He was probably a nice guy, too, but let's face it, Potiphar's wife was a scumbag. She's attracted by the superficial. Now, I've got a great story here from the Quran. Muhammad, writing in the Quran, spends a whole chapter on Joseph and his beauty, the 12th chapter of the Quran. Now, I'm going to read you some of this. This is quoted by Adam Clark. This is really funny. This is Clark speaking, talking about Muhammad from Muhammad's account. "The passion of Zuleika," for so the Asiatics call Potiphar's wife, "being known to the ladies of the court, they cast the severest reflections upon her." In other words, they're saying, you tried to seduce the guy in charge of your household. What kind of a slut are you? "In order to excuse herself," Clark continues, quoting Muhammad, "in order to excuse herself," Potiphar's wife, "she," Potiphar's wife, "invited 40 of them," 40 of the women of the court, "to dine with her, put knives in their hands, and gave them oranges to cut, and caused Joseph to attend. When they," the 40 ladies of the court, "saw Joseph, they were struck with admiration and so confounded that instead of cutting their oranges, they cut and hacked their own hands, crying out, 'Oh God, this is not a human being. This is none other than a glorious angel.'" Well, I don't know whether Muhammad knows what he's talking about, but apparently Joseph was handsome. We'll just go with the account here in Genesis 39:6. Joseph was handsome in his appearance. Now, verse 7 says that Potiphar's wife looked with desire at Joseph. Now, this is an interesting thing to me. This shows that women can lust too. And I've known about the story of Potiphar's wife all my life, but somehow I had this kind of prejudice in my mind that women are, in general, are these angelic beings with pure thoughts who never think about things like that. I remember I had a good friend of mine whose mother told me that God had put women on the earth to civilize men, and that thing really struck me. I remember that all my life. I said, that really is true. Men are animals in general, and women tend to civilize them, and I think that's true. But you can carry that too far and idolize women and think, well, they never do something like lust. Well, I've changed my mind on that. I've been watching testimonies on the internet on YouTube, and I find all these testimonies of girls raised up in the church with Christian parents, and they end up, they want money for Louis Vuitton handbags and stuff like that, and they end up prostituting themselves or being sugared babies. And one that I remember well, but my point about lusting is a lot of them talk about how they got into pornography at a young age in junior high school. Even younger than that, one of them said, I didn't even think girls watch pornography. I found out recently that it's still a minority, but there's a lot of women that are watching pornography and watching these testimonies. All of them that got off into terrible sexual sin, they all mentioned watching pornography. So I said, well, I guess women can lust too. They might lust in a different way. And one of them in particular I saw, this young girl, I guess she was in her 20s. She had long blonde hair, looked like a little angel, you know, like they all do. And she's talked about how she got off into prostitution and all that. And then she started out with pornography and masturbating with pornography. I said, you're telling the whole world this in a YouTube video? And then what struck me is she had gotten into her car to record this film. And she says, I have to be in the car. Please excuse me. I want some privacy. I don't want people to know I'm doing this. I said, you don't want people to know you're doing it, so you put it up on YouTube where anybody in the whole wide world can watch it, including your parents. I tell you, social media to me is just beyond my comprehension. But at any rate, if I'd have just thought, this is a classic example of here how women can lust too. I've talked to a woman who was radical Christian, but she had lived a very promiscuous life, and she said she was having trouble with lust. I said, well, I thought only men did that. She said, no, that's not true. So, okay. My illusions are shattered. Women can lust too. Now, Jameson Fawcett Brown says that Potiphar was free to roam around the house, free to roam around the cabin, because Egyptian women were not kept secluded in the Oriental fashion. They enjoyed much freedom at home and abroad. So she was free to walk around, free to try to seduce Joseph. And there's something else that needs to be factored in here, too. Her lust was coupled with the fact that she had a superior station, so she had power and control over Joseph. So Joseph is in a bad situation. When Potiphar said, come lie with me, consider what a temptation this was for Joseph. He's single and thus has no outlet for his sex drive. If he refused Potiphar's wife, she could make Joseph's life miserable, which she did, as we'll see. So that's what is tempting Joseph to say, okay, maybe I should go ahead and do this. But there were other factors that would make Joseph say, no, I don't want to do this. First of all, his godliness. He loved God. And of course, that's going to make him say, no, I'm not going to do that. Also, working against Joseph saying yes is the fear of losing his power and position, maybe even his life. So I don't want to give Joseph credit for being a great paragon of virtue in his ability to resist temptation, because he had some external constraints working against him to commit adultery. However, we still ought to notice that the house was empty, as we'll see in a minute. I don't know whether Potiphar was all that attractive or not. The scripture doesn't say, but she was available, so he was tempted, all right. But again, he had enough sense to know that's not a good career move. Sleep with the boss's wife? Uh-uh. We go to Genesis 39, verses 8 through 10. But he, Joseph, refused and said to his master's wife, Potiphar's wife, behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? As she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. So she kept at it. She wasn't going to just stop at one attempt to seduce. She kept after it day after day after day. I like how Joseph said, Potiphar has withheld nothing from me except you. That reminds me of that song, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, except in Alice. But why does Joseph say this? He's trying to explain to Potiphar's wife in a nice way as he can, look, you know what I'm going to lose if I do this. Don't expect me to go to bed with you. That's just crazy. He's trying to be reasonable with her, but she's not being reasonable. She's got to have him. Now, of course, I don't think it's just because Joseph was handsome. Of course, she was lusting. I don't think that's why. I think it's a power trip. Hey, if I can show that I can seduce Joseph, that shows I've got power over him. A lot of women like to do that to men to show that they're not going to be bossed around. So Joseph says, no, how could I do this great evil? All ancient nations considered adultery a great sin, as John Gill says, unlike today when it's been decriminalized. But generally, well, even today, adultery is very serious business. You can sue somebody for adultery. You can sue for divorce, at least. And people get shot for adultery. I mean, there's a church down the road from me. A guy committed adultery, or his wife committed adultery. And the guy shows up, and the guy who committed adultery was going to the church. So the aggrieved husband shows up. The pastor's a friend of mine and told me this story. The aggrieved husband shows up with a gun and fires the darn gun in the churchyard. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got shot. But, you know, that's serious business. Messing around with somebody else's wife. Oh, man. I remember one time I dated an engaged girl. It's a great story. But somebody pointed out to me, was that moral? I said, well, she's not married yet. Now, she was married. I wouldn't have thought about doing that in a million years. The difference between being engaged and being married. Well, anyway, Joseph didn't listen. Day after day, she importunes him, and he refuses. He did everything he could to flee from the situation. He wasn't like a moth that liked to fly close to the flame. He tried to get away from the flame. Now, the New American Standard Bible's way of saying this, he did not listen to her to lie beside her. That's sort of euphemistic. The NIV says he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Now, the fact that he would not even be with her sounds like the household. It sounds like that apparently Joseph wouldn't even talk to Potiphar's wife. He was saying, look, I've already told you no, and I don't want to be with you. I don't even want to be around you. Now, think about what an awkward situation was created in the household. It seems like people in the household would notice something was wrong. Well, Joseph is not even talking to Potiphar's wife. So Joseph is in a heap bad situation. We go to Genesis 39:11-15. Now, it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household was there inside. She caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. Apparently, Potiphar is escalating her attacks. She actually physically accosted him this time. Verse 13, Genesis 39, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. That he is referring to her husband, Potiphar. See, Potiphar has brought in a Hebrew, that's Joseph, to us to make sport of us. He came in to make sport of us Egyptians. She's including herself with the Egyptian eunuchs and household officials. He, Joseph, came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. Well, that's a bald-faced lie. Verse 15, when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. Now, as I said earlier, she had probably importuned him many times previously, and each time Joseph had run away. So she grabbed his cloak to stop him from running away like he had done previously. Now the question arises, why didn't Joseph fight to get his cloak back? He perhaps could have foreseen how she planned to use it. That's bad evidence. He was surely strong enough to get it back. He's a man, she's a woman. Well, here's some possible reasons why Joseph might have let that cloak go. First of all, it would be unseemly to fight with a woman, especially the master's wife. Yeah, that does look bad. John Gill suggests that Joseph might have had carnal desires aroused by the struggle, and I think that's preposterous. How do you have carnal desires for somebody that you hate? I'm sure Joseph hated her. She's trying to use her power to get him into a situation that's going to make him end up going to prison or maybe get killed. It's hard to have carnal desires for somebody you hate. I don't care if you're a sex addict. You're not going to be attracted to somebody that you despise. I mean, that's just human nature. So I think Gil's off the mark there. I think he just didn't want to fight with a woman, especially his master's wife. So Joseph fled. Now, where did he flee to? He just fled outside the house. It says in verse 12, he fled and went outside. Now, this puts Joseph in a bad situation because Potiphar's going to go outside and accuse Joseph to the public. Remember, there's nobody in the house now, so Joseph is outside. So Potiphar's accusation had to be those outside, and that's public. My master's wife is trying to rape me. So she goes outside where Joseph was, and she called to the men of her household. Those are probably the eunuchs who happened to be outside at the time, or at least the household officials if they weren't eunuchs. And she accuses Joseph by calling him that Hebrew. Now, Hebrew is a pejorative term. This Hebrew has come in to make sport of us. You know, she's basically appealing to racial prejudice here. Us Egyptians are being made sport of, made fun of by this Hebrew who's in charge of us all. She's appealing to envy, and she's appealing to racial prejudice. Now, Abram was the first biblical character to be called a Hebrew, as the NIV Study Bible says, and of course that was not pejorative, but it's interesting that the term Hebrew, this is according to Easton's dictionary, the name Hebrew is applied to the Israelites in Scripture only by one who is a foreigner, or by Israelites when they speak of themselves to foreigners, Or when the Jews were spoken of and contrasted with other peoples, they're called Hebrews. In the New Testament, you see that same contrast between Hebrews and foreigners. It's kind of interesting. So she used the word in the pejorative sense. Now, where did the name Hebrew come from? This is a little rabbit trail, but it's interesting. Nobody knows for sure. Here are some of the options. Option number one, the name is derived, according to some, from Eber, a man who is in the Table of Nations in Genesis 10:24. This man was the ancestor of Abram, so the Hebrews are the sons of Eber. That, to me, is the easiest explanation. Option number two, others trace the name of a Hebrew root word signifying to pass over, and hence regarded as meaning the man who passed over. In other words, he passed over the Euphrates, heading to the Promised Land. So the Hebrews are those who have passed over. Another option is the word, well, it's the same idea that the Hebrew word means passed over, but it's not passing over the Euphrates, but means coming from the region, beyond, passing over from the region or country beyond the land of Babylon. In other words, Abraham passed over from Babylon into Egypt. Didn't pass over the Euphrates. He passed over and came from the land of the Chaldeans, Babylonia. Another option is that the word Hebrew comes from the Hebrew word abhar, which means to pass over, whence eber in the sense of a sojourner or passer through, as distinct from a settler in the land. So Hebrew means sojourner rather than settler. All of which is very interesting. Nobody knows exactly where the word Hebrew came from, but that's what they called him. That's what Potiphar's wife called him. The word had a negative connotation, as I said before. As the NIV Study Bible says, the word is usually used by non-Israelites in the Bible in a disparaging sense. In fact, in just two more verses, we'll see Potiphar's wife use that word Hebrew again. Then she spoke to him with these words to her husband, "The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us." It sounds, could be disparaging. She didn't have to mention Hebrew slaves. She could have just said the slave, but she said the Hebrew slaves because the Hebrews, as Adam Clark said, were the, quote, very abomination of Egyptians. Joseph was a slave, so she rubs it in. Now, the term Hebrew was an ethnic term. Now, there's another word that's found on Egyptian monuments in the ancient Near East and tablets. It's Habiru or Apiru, which is probably related to Hebrew. And that word shows up all the time when you read ancient Near Eastern history. The NIV Study Bible mentions this word, Habiru or Piru, and it says, and the NIV Study Bible says that that word does not refer to an ethnic group like the Jews. It refers to social class, and it means propertyless, dependent, or immigrant, or foreign. Well, eventually, the Hebrews were looked at that way as propertyless, dependent, immigrants, slaves, as a matter of fact. So maybe, of course, this is before the Hebrews became slaves, so she wasn't using, Potiphar's wife was not using the term in an economic sense. She was referring, in a social class sense, she was referring to it Hebrew in an ethnic sense, but still negative. The NIV Study Bible also says that negative descriptions are given of the Hebrews in the famous Amarna tablets, and it's interesting that this description, these negative descriptions, describes the state of the Jews often through history. The Jews are the most discriminated against and despised group of people on this planet. If you look at history since they were founded, it's just amazing. People will find a reason to hate Jews. It really is almost irrational. It is irrational how people will hate Jews. Genesis 39:16-18. So she left his garment beside her until his master came home. She, Potiphar's wife, left his, Joseph's, garment beside her until his, Joseph's, master came home. Then she spoke to Potiphar, him, with these words, "The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me," that means to seduce me, "and as I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Actually, it doesn't mean seduce, it means to rape, basically. Serious accusations. Now, did Potiphar give Joseph a chance to explain himself? No, he just flew off the handle. Genesis 39:19-23. "Now when his, Joseph's master, heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him," which she spoke to Potiphar, "saying, 'This is what your slave did to me,' his, Potiphar's, anger burned. So Joseph's master," that's Potiphar, took Joseph and put Joseph into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he, Joseph, was there in the jail, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. So Potiphar's anger burned. Notice how unjust that was. He didn't even bother to get Joseph's side of the story. And I wonder why Joseph, when he was arrested, didn't try to give his side of the story. I imagine it was hopeless. Potiphar was just not going to listen to him. It may have never have occurred to Potiphar that his wife would do something that unjust. It may be that Potiphar did not want to face the fact that his wife had attempted adultery. My wife would never do that. Because if he did face that and admit that to himself, that would reflect poorly on his choice of a wife, would it not? And no man wants to think that his wife is committing adultery on him. That's pretty embarrassing. Potiphar got mad. What he should have done is remember Joseph's loyal, effective, and kind service. Now you throw Joseph in jail, as Potiphar did. Now Potiphar's going to have to find someone to rule his house. So Potiphar puts Joseph in jail. Potiphar had the right to do that because he was captain of the guard, and there would be a guard associated with his house there. Now, this is the same jail that the cupbearer and baker were put in, as we read about in Genesis 43. So he put them, that's Pharaoh, put them, the cupbearer and the baker, in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard. That's in Potiphar's house in the jail. So there's a jail associated with Potiphar's house, the same place where Joseph was in prison. Now, the NIV Study Bible says that it was fortunate for Joseph because this was not the worst prison he could have been put in. And John Gill adds the fact, not to mention that Potiphar could have had him put to death. Perhaps Potiphar went easy on Joseph because of Joseph's great behavior in the past, but he put him in jail instead of killing him. Now, what kind of a jail is this? Jameson, Foster, and Brown give this quote. Though prisons seem to have been an inseparable appendage of the palaces, this was not a common jail. It was the receptacle of state criminals, and therefore it may be presumed that more than ordinary strictness and vigilance were exercised over the prisoners. In general, however, the Egyptian, like other Oriental prisons, were used solely for the purposes of detention. Accused persons were cast into them until the charges against them could be investigated. And though the jailer was responsible for the appearance of those placed under his custody, yet, provided they were produced when called, he was never interrogated as to the way in which he had kept them. In other words, the prisoners were solely at the mercy of the jailers, and because of that, Joseph was blessed because his jailer was happy with him and put him in charge over all the other prisoners. Now, how long was Joseph in jail? Could be as much up to 12 years or so. Let's see how we calculate that. Let's speculate he spent 1 year in Potiphar's house. I think he probably spent more, but let's say at the minimum 1 year. There were 13 years between his sale into slavery and his appearance before Pharaoh to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. We know Joseph was 17 when he was sold into slavery. Genesis 37:2. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing his flocks, etc., 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 when he was wearing his coat of many colors and got sold into slavery. So that's 17 when he went into Egypt. Joseph was 30 upon his first appearance before Pharaoh. We know that in Genesis 41:46. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So 13 years he's been in Egypt, and those 13 years have to be divided between time in Potiphar's house and in the prison. We don't know exactly how to divide that time. It could be, it is more likely, he spent more time in Potiphar's house than 1 year and less in prison than 12 years. So we don't know. But anyway, somewhere between 12 and, say, 6 years or so he's in prison. That's a long time. Joseph was in jail a long time. We don't know exactly how long, but it's long enough. But even when he's in jail, God is with him, as I've already mentioned in verse 21. Joseph found favor in the same verse, verse 21, with the jailer. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says concerning this jailer, quote, it is highly probable from the situation of this prison that the keeper might have been previously acquainted with Joseph and have had access to know his innocence of the crime laid to his charge, as well as with all the high integrity of his character. That wouldn't surprise me that people would knew that Potiphar's wife had tried to frame Joseph. So Joseph's in prison, but at least he's in charge, and it could be a lot worse. Thank God for that. God's with him. And with that, we have finished Genesis chapter 39. That prepares us now for Genesis chapter 40. In chapter 40, I'll do verses 1 through 23, the entire chapter, and we will see there Joseph interpreting Pharaoh's dreams. I hope you stay tuned for that audio. And I hope you enjoyed this one.